Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Today we have a very practical topic. This comes from the Bhagavad Gita. This is the spiritual text that is the basis of a lot of things that we discuss. And that is the text we do here on Sunday morning from 11 to 12. So this particular topic comes in the sixth chapter, where the teacher tells us, lift yourself by yourself. Lift yourself by yourself. And, you know, we think that is a funny statement. I can lift somebody else, but how can I lift myself if I am standing or sitting? What do they mean by that? And why is such an important teaching in the Bhagavad Gita? It's not only in the Bhagavad Gita, but in any manual of self-improvement. The basic concept is that for any great endeavor, self-effort is necessary. If I want to become a great athlete, if I want to become a successful businessman, if I want to become a wonderful cook or a chef, administrator, politician, I have to make the effort. Nobody else can make the effort for me. I have to make the effort. Books and teachers, or in the spiritual parlance, the guru, can become a guide and give us, show us the right path, but cannot traverse the path for us. It's like when I'm going to Los Angeles and there is an arrow says 5 south going to Los Angeles. So that arrow is pointing the direction, the signpost. So what I do is I sit in the back of the car and tell the arrow, now you drive me to Los Angeles. It's not going to happen. The arrow can only point me the direction, but then I have to take the wheel of the car and go south to reach Los Angeles. Especially in among Hindus, we have this misconception that the guru can take us to salvation. So people have this idea, surrender to the guru, you know, hold on to his feet, and he will take you to the highest, you know, realm. Just you only have to have faith in the guru. And then they don't do anything else. They don't try to study the scriptures. They don't try to improve their life. They continue doing their corrupt political ways and, you know, but, oh, I'm dedicated to my guru. Once a week I go there, listen to his lecture, give some donation, and think that the guru will take him. And our Swami Chinmayananda, the founder, used to say, I am not a mule, guru. I'm not a mule. Don't think that you can climb on my back and I will take you there. I can only show you the path. I can only be a guide. You have to put your own effort. And we find that people have good ideas. They have good goals. You know, they say you must have an ideal. Yeah, one should have an ideal. One should have a goal, like a football or a basketball player says, I want to be like Michael Jordan or Kobe. A physicist says, you know, I must make some special discoveries like Einstein. So people have a goal, but then they don't do much to reach it. There is such a gap that I should be this. And we all have this idea. I must do this. I must get up in the morning and meditate. I must exercise. I must go to the gym. And then we keep postponing it into the future that, okay, today I couldn't do it, tomorrow I'll do it. Or we do it very faithfully for a month and I exercise very regularly, go to the gym, diet, whatever my goal is. And then the enthusiasm slowly weans off, slowly disappears. The desire to excel goes away and slowly becomes faint. And I say, it's okay if I didn't meditate today, you know, it's okay, maybe tomorrow. So there is always a gap between what I should be my ideal and what I really am. And it is this gap that gives us this feeling that somehow I am not good enough. So they say two things. One is that your ideal should be realistic, should not be, you know, like at this age, if I decide I want to climb Mount Everest, you know, it's not going to happen. But if I say I want to climb Mount Whitney, now that is something, you know, which is reasonable, which is doable. So have a realistic goal, but also don't make it so easy. You know, it should be a challenging goal. It should be an ideal. And then I must put determined effort to reach it. The other problem with having a goal or being an ideal is that most of us think that I am perfect. You know, I am fine. There's nothing wrong with me. If only this person would improve, or if only that. So that's the opposite, where the person thinks, I am good, I am okay. But this person is not good enough. This person is bad. And interestingly, we find that even though I may lack certain qualities, a person may himself be very selfish, very corrupt. But if he sees anybody else doing it, he immediately recognizes and is the first one to criticize. You know, why is this person so corrupt? He should be, you know, this and that. And even among thieves, it is very interesting. They say that among the bands of thieves, when they say rob a bank or they, you know, loot a train or whatever, when they sit down to divide the money, they do it very, very honestly. To the penny, they will divide the money equally. And if somebody cheats them, they get very upset. They will kill him. Now, they have cheated the whole world and stolen the money, but they cannot tolerate cheating in amongst one of them. They will immediately kill him. So the idea is that the ideal, what we want to be, we apply on others, that others should be like that if it's okay if I am bad. So they say, have an ideal. It should be a realistic ideal, it should be a firm ideal, and then put forth the effort to reach it. The effort should be consistent, and we'll talk about that a little later. Now, what are the obstacles? Why are we not able to achieve our goals? I have certain desires, I have certain ideals, and the problem is our mind. Our mind, which is the seat of emotions, should work under the guidance of the intellect, which is the capacity that decides, that judges, that discriminates between right and wrong, what I should do and what I should not do. But what most of us say, it's okay, you know, I know this is right, but nowadays, you know, who in this world is honest? Everybody is corrupt. Or everybody's doing it, it's okay. Or life is too short, you know, why should I struggle? Let me have fun, let me enjoy myself. So the mind has all kinds of excuses. Let's have fun, let's enjoy ourselves. Or you, this meditation is you can do after you retire, you know, after you're 65 or 70. Why do we want to do it right now? Let us enjoy life. So we always postpone and the spiritual masters tell us that how do you know you will even retire? How do you know you will reach 65? Or if you reach 65, then how do you know that you will have the capacity at that age to be able to sit down and meditate, to be able to understand the teachings? So they say that do not let your mind control you, but use your discrimination, use your power of judgment, which has been given to us by the Lord. And that is the difference between men and animals, because animals work only on instinct. You know, what pleases them, they do. They don't care about what is right or wrong or what others think. Instinct, they work. Humans are the ones who they say have been given the intellect. And we have this intellect, but we often fail to use it. Or even if the intellect speaks up, we shut it down. You know, it's also called as the voice of reason, as the conscience within. You know, the conscience says, this is not right, you shouldn't do that, you know. The scriptures don't say it's right, or the church doesn't, but we say it's okay. You know, we shut the voice down. And after a while, when you shut the voice long enough, then it stops speaking. And then after a while, we find people have no conscience. You know, they can kill anybody, they can cheat anybody. So it starts from childhood, it starts from young age, but as you crush the voice of the intellect, ultimately it becomes quiet, and then it says, it's okay, you go ahead and do whatever you want, and that is what happens. So how do I know what is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do, what should be my goal, what should be my purpose in life? They say constantly introspect, constantly look within. They say at the end of the day, you can sit down and look and say that today did I do what was right? Did I get angry with anybody? Did I hurt somebody? Was I mean or hateful? Or I had certain goals that I set for myself. Did I fulfill them? I said I'm going to get up at 5:30 in the morning to meditate. Did I do that? I promised somebody I would help them. So introspect at the end of the day. Not only introspect your activities, but introspect your emotions. That what kind of emotions arose in my mind? What kind of thoughts? What kind of ideas? Were they noble or ignoble? Were they helpful or hateful? Were they full of love or compassion? And as you introspect, honestly and truthfully, do not do it with the idea that, you know, for whipping oneself or for self-flagellation, but the idea that through this introspection, I realize that there is a certain goal I have set for myself, which I have to reach by myself. Nobody else can do that for me. And if I have not been able to, then through that introspection, I can realize, okay, these are the areas that I need to work in. These are my shortcomings, and so do it with the idea of self-improvement, not with the idea of self-criticism, but with the idea that through now this introspection, maybe tomorrow I can do better. First of all, I have to become aware of my faults. If I'm not even aware, if I think I'm perfect, then introspection has no meaning. But as I become aware, then hopefully I can put effort to make myself better. The sixth point, I think, is the most important point today, where it says that you have to lift yourself by yourself, but having risen to a particular height, do not fall back. Because they say to rise is very difficult, but to fall back is very easy. Like say, if I'm trying to move a rock, it's a heavy rock, and I'm trying to push it up the hill. And I'm pushing, struggling, sweating with a lot of effort, with a lot of strain. I finally push the rock to the top of the hill. And then if I let go, in 5 seconds, it comes down. Coming down is very easy. It took me 2 hours to push the rock up, but only took 5 seconds. And we find that in the lives of lot of people, you know, we find not only in ordinary people, but in spiritual, you know, the priests and monks and saints and people who are on the spiritual path, they put so much effort, you know, they leave their home and they stay in a monastery and they study all the scriptures and they live a life of celibacy, and then some, you know, temptation comes their way and immediately they fall, you know, they fall from their height and they get involved with, you know, the child molestation or something like that. And we find that it's so sad that all this person's whole lifetime of so much effort and penance has gone to waste because the person was not alert. And that is what they say. Our Swami Chinmayananda used to say, be alert and watchful, constantly be aware that I have made this spiritual progress and let me not fall back. Let me not fall down. Preserve that progress, very jealously guarded. Talking about falling down reminds me of this story. There was this patient, psychiatric patient, who was very ill. And so this psychiatrist spent a lot of time and effort, and over 1 year, he gave him all kinds of counseling and medication and all advice. And finally, he was cured. And the psychiatrist was very proud. You know, this seriously psychotic patient, I have cured him, I have made him well. So he says, the last day of 1 year, he says, now you're cured, you're fine, you don't need to come see me anymore. So the guy was leaving, you know, So the psychiatrist says, you must be very happy, you know, you are all cured. He said, no, I am very unhappy. He said, why? I put all this effort to cure you. Why are you unhappy? He says, a year ago, I was Alexander the Great. Now I am nobody. So that's what they say, that having reached a certain height, do not let your lower impulses pull you down. Because they say that you are your own best friend and you are your own worst enemy. I am my own best friend, I am my own worst enemy. How can I be my friend and also I be my enemy? They say that we have two factors in us, two competing forces. One is the higher and one is the lower. There is a constant battle going on in our bosom between these two forces, the higher forces and the lower forces. The higher forces take us towards divinity, to take us towards the Lord, take us towards improvement, you know, towards betterment, where I should become a better person, I should help the world to become better, I should be more spiritual, I should be more evolved, I should be more realized. And then there is a lower impulse in us, which says, it's okay, you know, let's have fun. You know, why do you want to get up at 5:30 in the morning to meditate? It's such a nice day. Let me sleep a little longer. Or I'm too busy today. You know, I don't have time to go to the class, or I don't have time to help somebody, or I promise so and so, but it's okay. I'll just call him and tell him I'm too busy. So the lower in us is constantly telling us, to go towards the path of fun, you know, let's eat and drink, let's enjoy. How does it matter? Why is it important? But the higher in one is always saying, no, this is the right thing for you to do. You need to evolve, you need to get better. And so there is a constant battle. And the individual who gives in to his lower impulses is his or her worst enemy. And the individual who lets the higher control him, and the higher becomes your friend. So if I go towards the higher, then that higher helps me to evolve. If I go towards the lower, then I become my own worst enemy. So that's why they say you are your own worst enemy and you are your own best friend. Another meaning of that is that there is spiritual power in me. There is a lot of power, you know, a lot of strength. A human has great intelligence, great power, great strength. Now, if that strength, if that intelligence, if that power is used to better myself and to better the world, then that power becomes my friend. But if I use that same power to persecute others, to torture others, to harm myself or others, then that same power, that same God has given me that power, and that same God becomes my enemy. The God-given power has become my enemy, like we have given the example many times. The gasoline in the car gives you the power to drive. Now you can take the car to the temple, you can take it to the house of prostitution, you can take it to the bar and get drunk. Now the gasoline is the same. But whether you take that to the temple or to the church, or whether you take it to the bar or you take it to the house of prostitution, that gasoline will become your friend because it has given you the power to go to a good place. But if you go to a bad place, then that same gasoline says, it has given me the power, so I have driven it. So the Lord is impartial. He gives equal power to everybody. It is up to us. If you use it well, then that Lord becomes my friend. But if I use it in a bad way, then that Lord within has become my enemy, because He has given me the power to do bad. You know, a person who is given a knife and he kills somebody, where does he get the power? From the Lord. So that's why he says, you are your own best friend, you are your own best worst enemy. And they say, surrender to the higher. Surrender, constantly remember that there is a higher power in me, that is the Lord, and that is the one that I prostrate to, that is the one I surrender to. And I dedicate all my activities to that higher, And I constantly remember that the Lord is within me is the one that is the doer of everything. I am not the doer. I am just an instrument in His hand. And work with surrender, work with, you know, humility. And when you do that, then you are constantly invoking. And they say that the Lord's grace is ever present. His grace is always with us. But when you invoke His grace and put in the right effort, it's not, it's both are necessary. You may say, well, I can just do everything. I don't care. There is God. Who has seen God? That is good. If you do the right thing, that is fine. You don't have to believe in Him. But if you believe in God and if you invoke His grace, then remembering Him gives you two things. One is it gives you peace of mind. When you remember Him, you become very peaceful. And secondly, it gives you confidence that the Lord is with me. And so when you work with that attitude, with a calm, confident mind, then your effort becomes more successful. So that is what they say, that the Lord's grace is there. We have to remember Him and we have to invoke His grace while we are working in the world. Then your work becomes more successful. It's not that the God will come and miraculously clean your house for you or miraculously, you know. But when you put the right effort, you find that His grace is around and you see His grace in the ways. How wonderful, how other people start cooperating. When you put your effort with the right attitude, with humility, without your ego and selfishness, you find that the whole community cooperates and the effort becomes far more successful. So that is God's grace, where you see that the effort becomes successful. And constantly remain alert. I talked about that. Because obstacles can come from different directions. You know, I may wish to be successful, but problems come, you know, and that's why at the end of each prayer, at the end we say Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Three times we say Shanti. Now, Shanti means peace. So why do we say peace three times? Because there can be three types of problems in my life. One is problems from the atmosphere, earthquake, thunderstorm, rain, floods, tornadoes, volcanoes. So those are the external problems. The second kind of problems can come from my neighbors, from my surroundings, from my friends and relatives. And the third kind of problems can come from within. So like to get an given example, I wanted to get up to meditate, but it's too cold today, you know, it's very freezing in Bakersfield. So I go back to sleep. So that is, obstacle came from the atmosphere. Or I got up to meditate and then I say, you know what? Today evening is my friend's party and I don't want to be tired. You know, if I get up at 5:30, I'll be too sleepy. So let me take another 2 hours of nap. So that is, obstacles came from the surroundings. But the third one is, obstacles come from within. I just don't feel like, you know. So three kinds of problems arise. So they say be constantly alert and we pray to the Lord for peace three times, that may there be peace in the cosmos, may there be peace in my neighborhood, and may there be peace in my heart. So constantly be vigilant, because obstacles in your spiritual progress or in your worldly progress can come from all different sources. And be alert and remember your goal and do not let these obstacles of the world bring you down. And in that book, Tattva Bodh, they will talk about, you know, titiksha, the ability to withstand the pinpricks of life and the ability to stay focused. And those are the things you will be learning in the Tuesday class. So be alert and be focused and do not let little pinpricks of life or obstacles interfere. Then they say, do not become impatient. You know, some people say, I want to meditate and I'm going to meditate 2.5 hours every day. You know, Radha Swamis is a faith in India. They meditate 2.5 hours. So I'm going to meditate. And then we sit down. So that is, you are forcing yourself, you know, this change. That's what, one day you are doing nothing. Then second day, 2.5 hours. So change is slow. Start with 20 minutes, start with half an hour, and then gradually, it's like a flower. You know, now there is a little bud, and you say, I want a beautiful flower, a rose flower. So you pull the buds, you know, hard, and pull them aside. they're going to rip the flower. You know, the flower has to, in due time, evolve. Slowly the bud will open and then the beautiful rose will bloom, and the color and the fragrance and the beauty. So in nature, we find that things happen very gradually, slowly. You know, the sun rises, the sun sets, the moon is moving, you know, the gentle wind, everything is very slow. But things that are very fast are destructive. Tornadoes, you know, hurricanes, earthquakes, they are very rapid and they are very destructive. So they say that be patient, all good things happen. And again, being patient does not mean that you become lazy and complacent, but be patient with your mind. Your mind has a tendency, you have been doing the same thing for 50 years or 60 years, and to expect the mind to change overnight will not happen. Be patient, be loving, at the same time be firm. We're not saying that you should be negligent, but patiently and with love, change yourself. The way you have been doing, change yourself and give yourself a new direction. And that is as change is slow. And lastly, remember that we are all essentially divine. Just as there is an apple seed and you plant it in the ground, an apple tree will come out and will give you beautiful apples. A mango seed will give you mangoes. So the God seed is within every one of us. We are all essentially divine. We are all a reflection of that one consciousness. That Om, that Lord is within every one of us. It is like the sun that has innumerable rays. So we are all innumerable rays, and we have the power of the sun within us. None of us is damned, or none of us is condemned, or none of us is a sinner. Every one of us has the potential to become a Jesus, to become a Buddha, to become a Guru Nanak. We all have that potential within us. They were also human. They also took birth from their mother's womb. They also walked on two legs. So each and every one of us has that divinity within us, has the potential to become God, to become God-like, to become saints. That's why we call saints as Bhagwan. Why? Because they have become one with God. So we also have that potential of becoming divine. It's just that we have not put the effort. It's like you put the seed in the ground, the apple seed, but then you don't do anything about it. You don't water it, you don't put any fertilizer, you don't nourish. The seed will never grow. It will remain a seed. The seed has to grow by itself, but the gardener has to provide some effort. So similarly, the seed of divinity is dormant in us, but we have to put the effort through right knowledge, through meeting with gurus and good teachers, through reading the scriptures, through understanding God's nature and then applying that knowledge in our life. So each and every one of us has the potential, but as I had said in the beginning, only I can lift myself. Nobody else can do it for me. The scriptures will be a guide. The guru can be a guide. All the great prophets and masters who have gone before us can be our role models. But it is I, only me, who can do this journey. And this journey has to be alone. My husband cannot do it for me. My wife cannot do it for me. In Hindus, we also have this belief that my wife can keep going to the temple and I can go to the business and do all corruption and dishonest things. As long as my wife is going to the temple and praying, I'm going to get half her merits. And we say, it's like saying my wife can go eat and then my hunger will be satisfied. It's not going to happen. I have to eat for my own hunger. So I have to put the effort. Nobody else can help me. Nobody else can guide me. They can guide me, but they cannot walk the path for me. So lift yourself by yourself. Put in the self-effort. Constantly be vigilant. Let your higher nature be your guide. And having risen, let us not fall back. It's a beautiful message. It's from the Bhagavad Gita.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.